This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakwood Realty. And I'm so excited for today's guest. And just on a quick side note, episode 496 this week. If you can believe it, we're almost at the 500 milestone. It's only taken a decade or so to get there, but a lot of fun.
What does it all mean? I don't know. That's a question for my counselor, but my therapist. Yeah, we're counselor. That suggests that I don't spend enough time on the couch.
Yeah. More. You're actually at a camp. Here we've got a great episode. Adam Bowden Ball's on the show. Adam's a really great guy. He's a financial advisor, senior financial advisor at Raymond James. Adam is looking at kind of big picture financial planning, which is really fantastic. So there's tons of takeaways, not only today for people that are looking to structure their finances for retirement, but also amazing advice for first-time homebuyers and buyers in general. And I think really it's a great kind of, you know, we've talked on this show a lot about the Kokomo life. Adam's the guy to get you to the Kokomo life.
That's right. Adam is the guy to get you to the Kokomo life. What I love about this is it's all things kind of strategies around tax sheltered instruments, let's say first home savings accounts, RESPs, obviously RRSPs and TFSAs. We're talking all the tools that Canadians have in their arsenal to build wealth, but also housing security and retirement, how you should think about diversifying if you're real estate heavy, which a lot of people in Vancouver are by definition, I think, with the cost of housing. So right. lots going on in this conversation. And there's nothing like getting an hour with an experienced planner to help you sort through the mess. And this is a clarifying conversation, that's for sure.
Absolutely, Matt. But before we get to our conversation with Adam, of course, we've got the segment that remains nameless.
The segment that remains nameless, Adam, we're coming up on episode 500. We're also coming to the end of the year. We're in the last week of November. So I did a bit of a deep dive on the stats. Actually, you've been doing some heavy lifting on the stats, looking back over the year, you know, thinking about trends and kind of what 2025 has become. So this might be an easy one for you, but an interesting one for the listeners. Adam, which property segment or which type of property? I'm thinking townhome, I'm thinking single family home, I'm thinking condo, half duplex, was the only one to occasionally reach a seller's market in 2025. So which type of property was the only one to reach seller market territory? And that's like, you know, we're coming pushing close to 20% sales ratios. So nothing exciting, but there was one.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
before
Matt,
we get to that, Adam, but before we get to that, you know, usually we highlight a listing. Sometimes we've highlighted some recent solds that we're excited about. This week, I want to highlight a listing that's coming on Monday. We have a 2-bed, 1-bath. It is not on the market yet, but this is a screaming deal for the Black Friday? Black Friday. This is yeah. Cyber Monday. I don't know what we'll call this, but this is an exceptional deal for the end of the year. A 2-bed, 1-bath with views, parking, $599.
Yeah. And this floor plan, it's like the quintessential Swiss Army knife, right? Like this is
the thing. I mean, in other markets, I would say this was attractive to investors. I think this is still makes a ton of sense for investors. They're going to, especially at this price point, like we're talking, we're listing below $1,000 a foot for a downtown building near SkyTrain, near all the amenities of Yale Town. And it's a 2019 build. Okay.
Yeah. Incredible.
This is exceptional. And it's coming on Monday. It will be featured at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. I didn't think I'd ever see a deal like this in my career, Adam, but it's coming. It's a Cyber Monday condo deal at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And while you're there, Adam, click sell with us because we have the sold plan. This is start on launch date to get your property ready for market. And I'm not, and just to be clear, this is not a bait price. We're not, this is $599 is not a bait price. This isn't, we're not playing games. This isn't the market to play games in, Adam. But download start on launch date sold plan at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click sell with us. But let's get back to that quiz question.
Okay, Matt, I'm going to go with, and I think a lot of people probably have been thinking through the various property types, houses, condos, townhomes. I'm going to go townhomes. I think they were the, and I'm basing this not on my deep dive in the stats, but just my feeling in the market. If you were a listing agent this year, you probably had best shot at kind of the entry-level townhouse market for getting stuff sold in a very reasonable time frame. That was kind of the shining light, the beacon of light, I think, in the market this year.
Makes a lot of sense what you're saying, because also it was definitely a market where people were moving through the market, right? Upsizing. You are right. Townhomes, the townhome product type was the beacon, as you put it, Adam, hovering at the best of times between 17 to 21%. Sales ratios. So nothing necessarily to write home about, but right. It was, and in fact, prices slid in the townhome market over the course of 2025. So didn't necessarily hold value from January through to the end of November, but weathered the storm a lot better than most, and speaks to the missing middle product that we all talk about and all get excited about. And is always a safe bet in the Vancouver market. So good guess. I thought it was a bit of a softball, but as usual, you hit it out of the park.
Well, here's the thing, Matt. If you've been listening to this show for the past decade, for the past almost 500 episodes, you've heard us talk about townhomes becoming almost the new single family detached for a lot of people, right? It's still a relatively affordable product, but it gives people ground-oriented living. Often you get some decent outdoor space with it. So it's not quite the single-family detached with a white picket fence, but it's in this market, it's as close as a lot of people are going to get. And it's a great product type for families. So I'm not surprised to see that. It is a great lifestyle. And so anyways, hopefully more townhomes being built in the future. We need more, of course, in the city of Vancouver. So hopefully more coming. Matt, let's get everyone's ducks in a row here, and let's talk to Adam, who is a phenomenal. He's a force. He's got a great understanding of how to look at finances. And you might be surprised at how little you actually need to pull the chute in a high cost of living city like Vancouver.
That is true. As long as you're mortgage free, let's get yes. Adam Bodenwald. This is a great conversation.
Enjoy. Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zenterra Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zenterra is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing. Because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia,
serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who mm-hmm. happen to be licensed at Oakwin, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Okay, so we're here with Adam Bodenball. He is the senior financial planner at Raymond James. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing excellent. How are you guys?
Very, very good. Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us, Adam. Really appreciate it.
No worries. I don't know if we're going to have to do like Adam 1 and Adam 2, but all I know is that, like I said in my email, your parents had great taste in name.
Adam, can you maybe start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up in, born in Montreal, grew up in Vancouver, though, for predominantly all my life. Attended high school here and ended up going to university in commerce and finance at University of British Columbia. Ever since the age of 12, I always knew that I wanted to deal with finance and money. I was a bit of a geek in that sense. So here I am, I started and obtained my certified financial planner designation in 1999 after UBC and kept getting designations after that. So it's been a great ride, great career. It's highly, if there's any young listeners out there, I highly recommend it. So yeah.
Right on. I, just out of curiosity, this might be a total tangent, but the role of AI in your world, has it impacted things? I mean, I'm thinking specifically when you say to young people, hey, this is because it seems like, at least I'm peppering ChatGPT with questions on an ongoing basis right now.
Yeah, no, it's been more of an enhancement than anything else. I can tell you that, we were talking earlier about, I'm licensed or I do a lot of cross-border business with Americans and Canadians. And so, if there's something that I have my CRPC designation in the States as well. And so if there's just something that, I just need to double check or something like that, just to make sure I'm conveying some, correct information, I'll double check on artificial intelligence or AI, as well as, obviously textbooks and whatnot. But it's been an enhancement. There are some implications. I would say anyone entering the field, wanting to go down more of the analyst field, when I talk to, investment firms and the like, they are, what used to take a week to produce a report is now done in minutes. So the question is do we need as many analysts, for example, on a team? So from that perspective, I think it made change the direction that some young people take in finance. But, just in real estate, I think when you're dealing with people, people just want that human connection and the experience of having, working with somebody who's gone through the experience of buying a home prior so that, they can, they're comfortable just with knowing that, there's just some things that you can't get from a computer that you can get from, right, say, a realtor who's been through it, hundreds of times before with, through their clients. So I think there's a lot of value in the personal end of things for sure.
Well, Adam, one of the reasons we wanted to bring you on the show today is because we've been talking a lot recently about, the show has centered a lot around real estate investing over the past 10 yep. years that we've been doing this show. And it's an interesting time in the moment. I mean, we're watching the stock market doing really well. We're watching a downturn in the Vancouver real estate market. And I know you've always approached your business with real estate and as a part of your financial outlook for people. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe kind of talk just a little bit about your process when you're working with new clients from the beginning?
Yeah, essentially it's not complicated. We just basically start with a discussion around what's going on in clients' lives, around their family, work, self-employment, if it's applicable, corporate planning, if that's applicable, lifestyle, their health and legacy planning. Really I start off the conversation, if money was no object, what and when would retirement look like for you? And, I think that real estate plays a tremendously important role in a retirement plan. I think this might sound weird coming from an investment guy, but I think that real estate over the long term is a tangible asset that will appreciate in value. I think it's one of the last, at least for your principal residence or where you're living, it's one of the last tax-free assets or tax shelters for an individual, for your average Joe Canuck. And I just think it's super important as you're heading into retirement. you know, that people have a roof over their head. Because, you know, like, if you're entering into retirement and you're renting, and, you know, some advisors advocate this, but I think that owning your own house is extremely important in retirement, because if you're renting, you're at the whims of a landlord. And the last thing you want to be doing at age 80 is being rent evicted and having to move. And I think owning real estate just gives you options that aren't available to other people. And there's no real reason why you can't have the best of both worlds, like have a balance between investments and real estate in a portfolio. So that's basically it in a nutshell.
It makes a lot of sense for sure.
Can you talk a little bit, Adam, about, you mentioned the principal residence exemption. Well, yeah. How do you, can we kind of unpack that a little bit in terms of how you think about that for retirement planning?
Yeah, absolutely. So most of the time, and most of the financial plans that I do for clients, you know, if you engage the services of a financial planner like myself, we'll usually have, like, even if it's a small amount, like, you know, just getting people in the habit of regularly saving and having access to the markets and having that compounding effect over decades, you know, and at the same time, getting them into their first home as soon as possible, so that with every mortgage payment, they're building up equity on the other side of the balance sheet there. I think at the end of the day, like, if you're looking like 10, 20 years down the road, you're going to have this, you know, paid off house. And you're going to have an investment portfolio in sync with each other. And it just makes for a great plan. The other thing too, is what I'm finding is that most people at the end of the day, with just the fact of sheer compounding and the math just makes sense. You know, you've got your investments, you've got your, you know, government pension programs, maybe some company pension programs as well, you know, but you know, with regards to setting up that plan and drawing an income from it over time, the investments, you eventually draw down the investments, but down the road, you've got your house, which, you know, for most clients who want to leave a legacy for their kids, the house and, you know, your tax-free savings accounts, in my mind, are the two best assets that you can actually leave to your kids, just because they are tax-free. And so your principal residence as a tax-free asset, when you pass on, there's no, knock on wood, so far, there's no capital gains tax on that. And while there may be a small amount of probate fee to transfer it to the next generation, there isn't a capital gain on that, which is taxable. It just passes to your heirs tax-free from that perspective. So it's a very efficient way to create a legacy for your future beneficiaries, so down the road, or charities, if that's important to you.
So so it sounds like getting into the market sooner than later for most young people is important. There seems to be a mainstream belief out there that young people can't buy homes in Vancouver. Yeah. What are you seeing on the ground that challenges this narrative?
Well, it's hard for young people because our politicians, and I don't mean to go off on a soapbox here, but, you know, when you listen to, you know, media outlets and so-called experts and academics and whatnot, and they say that it's impossible for young people to buy into the market here in Vancouver or Victoria or Kelowna or Toronto or even Montreal now. But I don't quite believe that. I don't think that the listeners to this podcast, that might apply to the average young person maybe, but I don't think that the caliber of people that are working with you as clients or the people that are listening to this podcast would necessarily fit into that mold. I think that I work with, well, I'll give you two examples. One is a young client. He started working with me when he was 20, let's say 24, in his early 20s, blue collar worker, like blue collar job, not earning a ton of money, a good job, good income, but he had a side business that eventually became his main business. But we just basically worked out a plan and we stood back and we said, okay, what are the tools that we have? What are the levers that we have that we can make this work for you? And I mean, he started off at 25 to 50,000. I'm trying to remember, but all I know now is that he's 29 years of age and has $380,000 saved up towards the, you know, down payment. And his fiance has come on board as a client and, you know, took a look at her and I said, you know, and I said, look, you've got a great employer matching program. You know, there's no way I'll ever make 100% on your contributions. Max out your employer contributions, get them to pay part of your down payment down the road. And then over and above that, and we've built her up to about $170,000. So this is just an example of a young couple in their late 20s in Vancouver who have, you know, over $500,000 put towards, you know, down payment on their first home. I'm in the same boat. I mean, I remember, you know, when I was sitting in commerce class, in commerce, I had to take urban land economics. And I graduated in 1996, so a long time ago. But if you were to take the headlines then and transport them to today, it's the exact same arguments. But I remember sitting in my urban land economics course and the professor was complaining, you know, like, you know, I'm a professor, I'm earning X and I'll never be, you know, I'm having trouble finding a home. So you guys will never be able to afford a home. And fortunately, I was sitting there and I said to myself, I had read enough history and enough biographies to know that that might apply to the average person, but there are always outliers. And I wanted to be an outlier. So I just basically did what I could. I read what I could and I saved and saved. And it took me 8 years, but I saved up enough to put a down payment on a home. And oddly enough, the same year that I bought the house, I was walking along Spanish Banks and I ran into him. Just off out of the blue. And I said, hey, Professor So-and-so, I bought a house. I was in your class in 1994 95. And I bought a house and I was not doing it to rub salt in his face or wound, but I was genuinely happy. And, you know, he's like, oh my God. He's like, how did you do that? That it's not rocket science. I just, you know, it was just like I maximized my, you know, I was working for a bank at the time and I just maximized my savings program at the bank. And they had a matching program that if you put in 8% of your salary, they would kick in 3%. Well, that's free money, you know, and you know, over time it just compounds and grows. And so I'm living proof that, you know, it's possible. And my clients, I do that all every day, that there's clients every day that, you know, are defying the odds and you're making it work. And I think now, especially with interest rates coming down and, you know, there being a surplus, I mean, you're the experts in this field. I mean, you know, I would think that maybe prices are softening a bit in the city. You know, I tend to think that, you know, and then the advent of the first home savings account and increasing the RSP, first time home buyers withdrawal plan to $60,000 and the tax-free savings account, you know, and even I've, you know, employed some unique strategies, even with a couple of clients with using the RESPs or the education savings plans for some clients to get their kids into their first home. You know, there's a lot of levers at our disposal now that simply didn't exist 30 years ago. And so I think just working, ignoring the noise, working with good professionals, like a good realtor who can help you define what type of property you want, where you want it, to have that goal and then to work with somebody who's actually been through the experience, him or herself, and to leverage those tools like the first home savings account and the RSPs to just make it work.
Well, and Adam, can we kind of talk about those tools? Because
yeah,
one thing that of course strikes me about when you were saving in the 90s into the early 2000s is there wasn't the TFSA.
Nope.
There wasn't the FHSA. The deduction or the ability to use your RSP was different than it is today. Obviously, everybody's different, but if a first-time home buyer or an aspiring first-time home buyer is listening, would you think about those tools and how to maximize them in the pursuit of a home?
Yeah, for sure. So the first thing that I would do is just basically say, okay, what's your timeline? Do you think that within the next 15 years, your goal is to buy a home? And your first home, and if the answer is yes, I would say your first stop is the new first home savings account that was introduced a couple of years ago by the federal government. And so basically, it starts at 18, but unfortunately in British Columbia, the age of majority is 19. So you can't open up these accounts until you're 19, unfortunately. But having said that, if you're 19 years of age, you can set this up, and like every institution has it, Raymond James, where I work, you know, any bank, credit union should have it. And you basically set up this account. It's called the First Home Savings Account. I wish it was called the First Home Investment Account, because it doesn't necessarily have to just sit in a savings account earning peanuts. You can invest it in whatever you want. But essentially what happens is you open up this account and you can put up to $8,000 in that first year into this account. The growth that happens within that account is tax-free. So it compounds tax-free. And not only that, whatever amount you put in, up to $8,000, that's actually a tax deduction off your income. So just to keep the math simple, if you're earning $100,000 a year, instead of taxing you on $100,000, the $8,000 comes off. So the government's only taxing you on $92,000. So you're getting a tax savings right off the bat. The money grows tax-free. And then you can keep contributing up to $40,000 in total over the subsequent years. And then, within 15 years, you can take that money out towards your down payment on your first home. So that's stop number one, I would say. If your medium-term goal, if your overriding goal is to get into your first home as fast as possible, and I would probably advocate that that's probably a smart thing to do. So that's number one. Number two, would say, is this is a toss-up between some advisors would say, go for the tax-free savings account because you put money in and it can compound tax-free and you can take it out for whatever you want. But my recommendation would actually be, if your overall objective is to get into your first home as quickly as possible, is to actually open up a registered retirement savings plan, or an RRSP is the acronym. And then what you do is, once you've maxed out your FHSA, you keep maximizing your RRSP. And then basically for every dollar you put into your RRSP, that's also a tax deduction off your income. So the government, the Canada Revenue Agency, is not, between your FHSA and your RRSP, you're getting a lot of tax deductions. The CRA is not going to be happy with you, but whatever, it's their rules. You can play with it. And you basically, I would say, when that money grows in your RRSP, once you get up to that $60,000 figure in your RRSP, what I would say is that's the time to really sink back to somebody like myself, like a financial planner, and say, okay, we're maximizing my first home savings account, or we've already cracked $60,000 on my RRSP. Now comes the decision point, to start putting money into your tax-free savings account. You won't get the tax deduction on your tax-free savings account contributions, but what's nice about it is that it compounds tax-free, and you can use it in combination with your first home savings account, your RRSP, the $60,000 in your RRSP, and whatever's in your tax-free savings account. You can use those three pools to put together a down payment to get into your first home as fast as you can. So that's kind of the order and the benefit of each one. And by the way, if your income is relatively low and you're not going to be getting a significant tax benefit by deducting all that money that you're putting into your first home savings account or your RRSP, you don't necessarily have to claim it in the year that you contribute it. You can actually carry that deduction forward to a year in the future where your income is higher, or, you can kind of spread it out. So so that's another piece of advice there.
So Adam, if I understand, for the average person, it's FHSA, RRSP, then TFSA. For somebody who's aggressively saving and has gotten enough for a down payment, I'm just curious, would you, the minute, say you need $100,000, you got to have $100,000 accessible in these accounts. Is that the moment you'd go out and buy a property? Or do you want to build a buffer in these accounts? How do you think about, you know, when to actually, how much is enough, I guess, sure, and when to kind of pull the trigger on a property?
For sure. I would recommend that, you know, when you do have enough, like you've maxed out your 60,000, you maxed out your first home savings account, you've maxed out your 60,000 in your RSP, and you've aggressively saved towards your TFSA. The first order of business is, if you reach that $100,000 threshold, and that's like your 20% down on your, on the place that you want to buy, the first order of business is you want to shift that from growth-oriented investments to safety. Because as realtors, I mean, you probably have had stories where people have had, like, you know, their money, their down payment all saved up, but it's in like some mutual fund, and then there's a big correction, and now you're like,
it's in a meme stock.
Yeah. So I would say, as boring as it is, I would say, make sure, and as hard as it is, I would say, yeah, the trick is to just shift that to safety type investments, whatever is earmarked for the house. And then basically, but I would say, you know what, when you've reached the down payment that you need, plus maybe, you know, and you can talk to your clients more about this, you can speak to your clients more about this, you know, like maybe keeping like 2.5 to 5% a bit more is for legal fees and land transfer tax, if applicable, that kind of thing. But, you know, in and around that area, yeah, I would actually seriously start looking at getting your financing together, talking to a mortgage specialist, talking to your realtor, and being transparent with your realtor. Because to me, it's just, they know exactly your price point. They can stretch the value of the property for as much as they can, given the parameters that they have to work with. And so, you know, it's costly to keep, you don't want to necessarily keep buying and selling property either, like, because every time you do, there's, you know, realtor fees and land transfer tax and all this overhead that, you know, eats away at your wealth. So what you want to do is you want to basically buy as much house as you can up front, and then just start chipping away and start chipping away at those mortgage payments, and just like, and know, you know, that even if you're making like a, you know, just keep the math simple again, even if you're making like $1,000 mortgage payment and you're, you know, $990 is going to interest, you know, and $10 is going to equity or whatever the case may be, the math isn't that bad, but you're still $10 ahead than where you were a month ago. So,
yeah,
and it just keeps sliding more in your favor. So to the point where you wake up one day and just, it's an automatic savings program is basically what it is. And you wake up one day and you're within spitting distance of paying it off and just getting that boogeyman out of your cash flow. And it's such a, I can tell, you know, your listeners from personal experience, and, you know, like, I paid off my mortgage in July of 2023, I think. And it's just such a freeing experience. Like, it's just like, it's just amazing. And you know, it's, and it takes time, but you're young. And, you know, for your young listeners out there, you know, who might be feeling a bit despondent and might be struggling to, you know, make ends meet, you've got the most valuable asset of all. Like, I'm 51, you know, I've still got a lot of time ahead of me, but, you know, time was my most valuable asset. It's not making the big, huge income. It's not making, you know, the picking the right meme stock or whatever the right investment. Time was the most important asset or thing that I had it, you know, going for me. And all your 20-somethings listening, that is definitely the most powerful tool that you have at your in your arsenal to get you into your first home as quickly as you can.
That's really good advice, especially in a moment where it feels like young people want to be rich instantly. Like, they want it tomorrow. They don't want to be patient about it.
Yeah.
You know, and a couple of things, you hit on so many good points there, but there is a fear out there about being so concerned about being house poor that you buy too little house and then you have to call your agent in 1 or 2 years and... Yeah. And that happens all the time. And I think because people are, especially if you're in your late 20s or in your early 30s, lots of potential life changes. And, you know, you meet somebody, you have a baby on the way. There's lots of things that can change, career change, right? But a lot of, we've talked about that on the show, of making that mistake, and then pretty soon you're out of pocket an extra $50,000 on property transfer tax, realtor fees, et cetera. And you should have just stretched yourself a bit more to make sure that you could stay the course for 5 years or more, right?
Yeah.
So really, really good points there. When we were talking actually offline, Adam, you'd mentioned a strategy around, I think it was RESP related to, for parents out there that are potentially gifting money to their kids or trying to help their kids get into the market.
Yeah, for sure. I've run into this scenario twice already this year. I'm a big believer in incorporating all the family together when we have our meetings, if I can, if clients are open to it. And I had two instances where a young adult, I should say, because they're 18, graduating high school and deciding between which university to go to. And two of them were thinking about Western or McGill. And, you know, and I said, that's fine. You're just, you know, we're open and, you know, working with the parents, we had, you know, they put away the $2,500 every year for, you know, since they were born. I was on their case when the kids were born, put away the $2,500 a year. Government chipped in their, you know, the taxpayer chipped in their $500. So it was $3,000 a year up until the age of 14 when all the government grants were maxed out. And so, yeah, with that relatively small investment, each of these parties had about $100,000 in their RESPs to fund their education. And so I said to them, I said, look, I said, you've got a choice. You can either stay local and save a ton of money on tuition and event and get the same degree at the end of the day, the same letters after your name, or you can go and have the university experience in Western and McGill, live in a different city, knowing though that this is going to, you're going to drain that $100,000 just on tuition and housing costs. And I'm not saying which one's better. I just want you to make a decision here, because what you have, and we did the financial plan for the clients, and in both cases, they didn't need their tax-free savings accounts to fund their retirement. It was extra, basically. And so I basically said to the kids, I said, you've got an opportunity here. If you stay local, one ended up at BCIT, the other one ended up at UBC, I think. If you stay local, your tuition costs are going down. If you stay at home, your costs are even that much lower. But what we can do is the parents were open to using their TFSAs to gift to the kid to get them into a condo. And in one case, it was a townhome. And basically, all I need as far as to access the RESPs is confirmation enrollment. We don't necessarily need proof that they're using it for textbooks or tuition or whatever the case may be, because technically it's housing costs, whether you're paying rent in Montreal or, you know, putting it towards rent here in Vancouver, it really doesn't matter. In this case, you know, both kids, when they realized the potential of this, they said, if I can have my own condo, you know, after university, after a degree, after my four years. And we use the RESP withdrawals to make the mortgage payments on their place. All I needed again was confirmation enrollment that they were at BCIT and at UBC. We used the parents' tax-free savings account, gifted to the, you know, for the down payment. We used the RESP payments to make the mortgage payments. And even when we compared like paying rent to interest payments on a mortgage, it basically was a wash. The first year, it didn't quite work out because of the land transfer tax. The calculation wasn't in the people's favor. But from the kids' perspective and the parents' perspective, they're like, who cares? Because, you know, the kid's just going to transfer the ownership of the condo or the townhome to the kid once they graduated and university. And we basically achieved two goals at the same time. We've paid for their tuition, we paid for their post-secondary education, and we've helped subsidize, you know, them getting into their first condo, you know, in relatively short order. So that was just two examples of clients where we were able to leverage the RESP to basically pay the mortgage payments which would have gone to rent in London, Ontario, or Montreal. So just because we had that discussion with the kids, you know, and we had kind of like a family conference and the like. So yeah, that's basically an example of where you can leverage the RESP to help cover mortgage payments or down the road. So yeah.
And I'm just thinking with, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, we've helped a lot of mom and pop investors buy rental condos, right? This would presumably also be a strategy for people that bought 5 years ago and have tenants currently paying the mortgage. This could, and with the idea that you're hopefully going to transfer that condo or help use that condo to help your child get into the market when they're in university, the RESP can, your kid moves in, RESP goes to paying the mortgage, and then
yeah,
the same result
deal. Same deal. The only thing is the only thing that you have to be somewhat cognizant in that kind of scenario would be because if the parents had it as a rental condo first and then they're transferring ownership, it's a change of use. And so there might be a deemed disposition or like a sale to the adult child. And if there is a capital gain on that, there would be a capital gains implication on that for taxes. But if prices haven't increased that much, then yeah, it wouldn't matter. So, and that was part of the reason why we executed that plan for these two clients, you know, here, because it was almost like the scenario of the condo market and the townhome market in Vancouver is it has softened a bit. So we're like, you know what? We don't anticipate. I mean, it'd be great if prices went up a lot, you know, in those 4 years. But even if, you know, we think it's going to be soft for the next little while, but that's not a bad thing because then you're not paying through the nose tax-wise down the road either. So it's kind of a win-win situation for parents that want to help their kids get into their first home.
And I guess you could potentially pull equity out of, I'm just thinking another strategy there would be to pull equity either out of your real estate portfolio if you're a real estate investor and purchase the condo just as you outlined, Adam.
Yeah. The only caveat on that is if you were to pull out equity and then it was for a principal use, you know, that might not be tax deductible because it was used for a principal residence purchase. So that would be, you'd want to just basically make sure that all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed and there's a distinct paper trail and with your tax preparer, just making sure that the paper trail is there so that, you know, you're on board with the Canada Revenue Agency on that. So, yeah.
Maybe shifting gears here just a little bit, Adam, a lot of our listeners are real estate investors in BC or homeowners in BC. Yeah. They likely have watched the market do its thing over the last 10, 15 years. They have a lot of equity, but not a lot of cash flow coming in. And they're probably at a moment in their life where they're thinking, okay, well, maybe retirement's the next 10 years or so, 10, 15 years. Do you have any thoughts on how people can maybe strategically shift that balance as they approach retirement or some of the things that they should be considering at least?
Yeah. So from that perspective, so there's two avenues that you can kind of go down. The first one is basically when I do financial plans for clients that are heavily invested in real estate, basically as we approach retirement, the first strategy is really to attack paying off mortgages and using all the rental sources, all the rental income to attack the smallest mortgages first, and then basically let that compound. Because once a mortgage has been paid off, obviously that frees up a lot of cash flow. And then basically we can just use that cash flow, surplus cash flow, to just keep paying off mortgages down the road kind of thing. And so you get this snowballing effect, this reverse snowballing effect where you're paying off freeing up your cash flow and paying off your mortgages as soon as possible. Some people would argue that, you know, I don't want to pay off my rental mortgages that quickly because it's tax deductible. And that's a fair comment. But what I would say is that you can employ that strategy of that reverse snowball strategy so that you've got that rental income stream or that passive income stream in retirement. to help fund your retirement. And obviously, at that point, when I do financial plans for clients that have a lot of rental income, we can project out 10, 20 years down the road that these clients are going to have significant rental income coming in. Then, you know, we can just put the cart before the horse and work in reverse. Basically, I say, okay, we only need, if you got all this rental income coming in, we only need X amount of investment income coming in. So it's not that much that we need to actually generate from investment portfolios to supplement their lifestyle. Now, on the second equation, if clients are okay with the risk of carrying debt into retirement, you know, if, and you know, they want to maintain that tax deductibility of the mortgage interest on rental properties, what you can do is, a lot of the mortgage products that are offered from banks right now are these home equity line of credit. So as you, these umbrella mortgages. So as you pay down the mortgage, the line of home equity line of credit becomes available. And only if, and I usually only recommend this for clients that are actually wanting to maintain the same level of debt that, you know, they have going into retirement. What you can do is you can take that available credit or some of it, whatever amount that you're comfortable doing, and using that and buying an investment that can spin off income on a monthly basis. So because you've used the line of credit to buy a non-RSP, non-TFSA, just a regular investment account, you've used that to buy an investment. If there's a probability of earning an income, dividend or interest income from that investment, that amount that you borrowed is also tax deductible. So basically the story goes that as you pay down your rental property or the mortgages that you use to buy a rental property, you can re-leverage that and use that to buy an investment outside of RSPs or TFSAs. And then that monthly income, you can have that spun off and put into your bank account every month. The good news is that right now there's a couple of strategies. You know, for every $100,000 that I invest for clients, you know, we can generate anywhere from $250 a month up to $800 a month just in passive income, which is quite significant when you get to the more of the alternative, unique kind of scenarios. And it's not, these aren't strategies that are new. The one strategy has been around for more than a decade. And so they've been through different market cycles and they're considered low to medium risk. So, you know, and the good news too on that is because it's investments, unlike rental income or employment income, a little bit of the interest income would be fully taxable like that income, but some of that income comes in the form of dividends and some of it comes in the form of capital gains, which are taxed at a lower rate. So when I say that you're generating like anywhere between $250 and $800 a month in income, some of that is coming in the form of dividends and capital gains. So what's staying in your pocket at the end of the month after tax is actually more than what you would normally earn from like your regular employment salary, for example. So yeah, hopefully that was clear.
That is clear. I just want to, just because somebody out there is just probably thinking, okay, so the first rule you kind of mentioned is that you should start paying the lowest mortgage down first.
That might seem counterintuitive because some people say, oh, well, that's my lowest interest rate. So I want to preserve that. First of all, interest rates in general are really low now. They're not as low as they were during, you know, a couple of years ago or 5 years ago, but they're still relatively low. But for me, psychologically, because finance, as crazy as it is, like I went into finance thinking it was all numbers, all black and white. But there's a lot of psychology behind this finance as well.
Of course.
And what I find is that if people can attack the smallest debt first and get that boogeyman out of the closet, like off their back, get that monkey off their back, that frees up cash flow. And then if you're disciplined enough, you can take that surplus cash flow and just pay it against your next largest, you know, your next largest mortgage debt, or whatever the case may be. So, and if you just keep snowballing that, I find that that's just gives people the incentive or the motivation to just keep going. And
because the momentum, right?
Momentum. It's all momentum and it's all that discipline. And, you know, if you've got a $1 million mortgage and you're throwing $10,000 a year against it as a lump sum payment, you feel like you're never going to get there. It's just like this overarching, like this monster beast or whatever that's sitting there. And whereas if you've got like, you know, a few rental properties and you got a mortgage with $100,000 left on it and $500,000 and $750,000 or whatever the case may be, if you attack the $100,000 first, like you're going to see some significant progress against that. And you're going to be able to do that. And in the meantime, you're still paying down the other ones. It's just, you know, but once that $100,000 is done, then you attack the next smallest one. To me, it's just psychologically, it's just like, it's just, again, Matt, exactly what you said. It's just that snowball or momentum piece that just starts compounding on itself to your benefit. So, yeah.
And if somebody has, say, two revenue properties and their principal, should they be revenue first, principal residence first, or does it?
That's actually a really good point and something that I, you know, forgot to mention. If you do have mortgage on your principal residence, that's not tax deductible. So yeah, you should be attacking that mortgage first, not regardless of the balance. But, you know, I was thinking more along the lines of all the rental mortgages that are available. You'd want to just attack the smallest balance first, but you're absolutely right. Attack your principal residence first, get that non-tax deductible mortgage off your back, any non-deductible debt, you want to attack that first. So yeah, absolutely.
Just thinking about, you know, this idea of leveraging a property to put into another product where you're generating cash flow. What about a lot of our clients, I would say, have invested in a lot of real estate. And if they look at their net worth, they're, you know, 70% real estate, 80% real estate. I was talking to a realtor who made the claim that they were over 90% real estate. Sure, So diversification has not been a strong suit for a lot of people that have benefited from the last 15 years in Vancouver real estate. Are there strategies to leverage those properties to diversify? And I'm thinking mainly to use those umbrella products, but I'm curious as to what you would advise somebody who's not necessarily looking for retirement income, but more to diversify their net worth or portfolio.
Yeah, the only way to do that would basically be to use that umbrella mortgage product, borrow, and then invest it, just to diversify the asset base. You don't necessarily need to generate an income per se on that. Well, actually, you do. To make it tax deductible with the CRA, there should be a probability of earning at least some dividend and interest income on there. And so, but from all intents and purposes, most investments do qualify for that tax deduction. But yeah, that would be really the only way to kind of diversify yourself away from real estate, just to get some market exposure as well. So, but as I said, I think that real estate is a great investment. I've been in the business so long that, you know, I remember the 2000s when from basically the dot-com bust all the way out to, you know, 2010, they call it the lost decade in the investment market, because you had like the tech wreck, 9/11, the accounting scandals, government shutdowns, and it was one thing after another. And then the financial crisis, it was like, if you started investing in 2000 and you just left it, you didn't make any money. So, but whereas real estate was booming, and I remember having that conversation with clients all the time, you know, like they're like, oh, I'll just buy real estate because real estate always goes up. And so it was like the flip side of what we see today. But I think that, yeah, to your point, if you want to diversify your asset base, and that would basically, and you don't want to sell your real estate, that would be a neat way to do it, so that you're diversifying your asset base and still getting a tax deduction as well off the borrowed funds. But I have to reinforce and I have to reiterate that for the interest to be tax deductible, it's got to be non-registered investments outside of TFSA, outside of RSPs. And it also has to have a probability of earning some form of dividend or interest income on there. So yeah.
One of my favorite articles to read is when it's like Jim and Judy have $3 million and own their house outright or whatever, which I'm sure you find some of those probably annoying and some of them bang on. We hear specific numbers all the time about how much Canadians need to retire And I know this is probably a case-by-case basis, depending on spending habits and everything else. But yeah, with today's higher costs, and we're obviously in a high cost of living city, can you talk about like what that number might look like or how it's kind of changed recently? And yeah, it seems...
How you figure it out. Within, how you figure out...
Well, and how you... Exactly. How you figure it out. And the other thing is like with inflation kind of post-COVID, like I don't think anybody really predicted the run-up we've seen, you know, when an apple is a few dollars now or whatever. So...
Sure. Yeah.
You sound like John McCain or who was it? George W. Bush, not knowing the cost of milk. Apples a few dollars. Anyway, go on.
So to that point, I would say, you know, your best defense against inflation is buying assets that generate income and are inflation, that move with inflation. So from that perspective, real estate historically, for example, has been a good inflation hedge, you know, and other assets that continually increase in value and generate, you know, that kind of an income. So that's your first line of defense. To answer your question, the big expense for most people in Vancouver and Toronto and wherever people may be listening is housing. So once your mortgage payments are done, you know, there's this, what I'm finding when I do for retirement plans for clients is there's this honeymoon period when they stop working, or a honeymoon period of retirement usually lasts about 5 to 10 years, where they're traveling and spending money. But what we do find is that people tend to actually get tired of airports and all the stress that comes with travel. And they kind of sink back into a community that they're comfortable with and meeting their buddies for coffee and stuff like that. So from that perspective, I think most people, when they worry about retirement, like, am I going to have enough? Because what they're doing is they're dealing with recency bias. And what they're saying is, okay, in order for me to maintain my lifestyle that I have today, I need to have X number of dollars. But the reality is that that's probably only going to last like the first decade of or so of retirement. Then you start to see an ebb. And then you might see healthcare costs accelerate towards the end of life. And that's why, again, why I like real estate, because we can work out a plan and draw down the investments, but your real estate actually is almost like a plan B, a safety valve, because if you do need extra healthcare costs down in late retirement, we can always sell a home or whatever the case may be to fund that, basically. So that's the way I usually do it. But to give you a number, I would say that once housing is taken care of, I've got seniors that live quite comfortably on, you know, like $4,000 to $5,000 a month after tax. Like, it's not Vancouver, for all of its faults, Vancouver is a pretty reasonable place to live. If you're outdoorsy, all the beaches are free, the community centers are free, everything like that. Everything's within walking distance. You've got your little cities within a city, like whether you live in Kerrisdale or Kits or downtown West End or whatever the case may be, like there's all these little neighborhoods within a big city. And so what I'm finding is that with proper planning and the like, yeah, I know there are people very comfortably between their government pensions and their any maybe work pensions, but sometimes not. But yeah, $500,000 is more than enough to cover them off for those lifestyle expenses, you know, and it depends on each individual. Obviously, I've got one client who retired from the RCMP. He's got a defined benefit, gold-plated, inflation-protected pension plan that covers off all of his day-to-day lifestyle needs. And then we've got like $100,000 in a RIF that he uses to pay for his trips. That's his fund money. So, and then I've got other people that, you know, of like $5 million that they'll never use up. So, I mean, it really is kind of, you know, all over the map as far as to answer that question, but it's doable. And I would say, you know, once people see a plan in place and once they see year by year, line by line, where the different sources of income are coming from, it's quite powerful. And they're like, you can see the relief off the shoulders. It's quite rewarding to see that, you know, just that sense of relief that comes off when they see the numbers in black and white. And, but yeah, no, I've got people that are, you know, quite comfortably living, you know, on that amount of income or that amount of assets or liquid assets, you know, from that perspective, for sure.
Wow. So 500 grand, you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I see it all the time. So yeah. Yeah.
After housing.
Yeah. Once your housing is done, you're sitting pretty, you know, for as far as from cash flow perspective. So yeah. But again, I mean, you're not golfing at Pebble Beach every weekend. But you know, it's not uncommon, basically, is what I'm talking about.
Right. There.
So yeah. I have to say almost the financial industry, I think, probably does a disservice in scaring people. But if you actually work with a certified financial planner, somebody that can work out a plan, incorporate the government pensions into the mix, plus any other income streams coming in, you'd be surprised. The other thing too is, and I don't want to talk about it, or I don't want to like have people bank on this, but depending on which bank bank study you read, I mean, we're within the foreseeable future, we've got a $700 billion to $1 trillion wealth transfer coming down the pipe within the next decade. I would say next decade or so, in a decade or two. So from that perspective as well, people, you know, you should never plan with that in mind. But, you know, those are the windfalls that happen that to some people that you know, help just make that decision, you know, to retire early or whatever the case may be, that much more palatable for people. So yeah, puts them over the top, puts them over the edge. So yeah.
Presumably the answer to this is as soon as possible. But when people are, I would suspect a lot of people that are kind of middle age,
yeah,
don't have a financial planner, right?
Yeah.
And if they're thinking, you know, you just outlined kind of looking at the line items with a planner,
yeah,
eases the tension or the stress. When do most people reach out? When should people reach out? You know, if they're trying to kind of figure out a plan for the next even 10, 15 years before retirement type thing.
Yeah. So I would say, generally speaking, if you've got assets, whether it's house, you know, the like, you know, but you're serious about saving, that's, I think, the key for most financial planners is that we want to work with people who are self-motivated, are disciplined, and want to leverage the tools at their disposal. They don't necessarily need to be, you know, multimillionaires or anything like that. But because it's like, I had a young client, you know, he said to me, why are you taking me on as a client? Like, I've only got like, like 50 grand. I said, number one, you're a young professional. You're earning a good income. You're saving a lot every month and you've got a growth mindset. And I know that within the next 10 years, and I showed him the calculator, I said, at this pace, within the next 15 years, you're going to be a $1 million account. And to me, that's, you know, if I can be a part of that, if I can help people to get from point A to point B and not make the same mistakes I did I've done a service. So I mean, I know that some advisors won't take clients under $1 million and whatnot, but there are great advisors out there that will, and they work at banks, they work at investment firms like me, like Raymond James here. You want to look for people that have credentials, certifications, CFP or Certified Financial Planner designation is a great one to look for. Another one is the CIM, Chartered Investment Manager, or CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst. These are all really important designations. So, and you want somebody who is innovative and is motivating, basically, and has the experience and has lived through that as well. You know, so yeah, that was a long winded way of answering the question is it depends on the client, because, you know, the worst thing, you know, that the most frustrating thing for me as a financial planner would be to work with somebody, you know, and to get that car loan paid off, to get, you know, them into their first house, to get that car loan paid off. You know, and then the plan, the original plan was to get them started on the on saving up for the tax-free savings or paying off their mortgage. And then they go out and they lease a new Porsche for $2,000 a month.
They go to Vegas for the weekend and you're like, okay, all this is down the tubes.
To me, you know, I've had those clients and you just feel like the wind's been sucked out of you. You've been cut off at the knees and you're just like, we've come this far, and just like to have that happen. Yeah. It's just really frustrating. So, you know, but for me, it's you know, you just really want to, you know, the industry is full of very good people that want to help. And yeah, you just have to find who you click with and who's in looking out for your best interest. And, you know, people today have a really good BS meter, and you just have to find somebody that you click with and who gets it and who's willing to work with you and just work to get you from point A to point B, like I said before, as quickly as possible. So, and you will. I mean, the math, and you don't have to necessarily have the best investment in the world. You don't have to, you know, you can do it with, you know, mutual funds or index funds or exchange traded funds or individual stocks. It's like anything in life. You buy good quality real estate that'll last you forever. You buy a good quality pair of shoes that'll last you for years. You buy good quality companies, they'll last you for years. And they're great compounders. And you know, the math just makes sense. If you keep chunking away, if you keep saving and you leverage those employer, you know, matching programs, and then you maximize the government accounts like the FHSA, like we talked about before, and the tax-free savings account and the RRSP, and you might not have the financial means to do every one of those at the current present time, but at least get going. I don't care if it's like $50 a month. Like, anybody should be able to afford $50 a month. It's the habits. The habits are the key. And then when you have your reviews, you basically say, okay, well, did you have a raise this year? Okay, great. You know, let's move some of that into your savings program. And before you know it, like, you know, some people say, oh, it's so intimidating to be able, you know, to save up to buy a home or, you know, $1 million home in Vancouver and stuff. You can either, you know, listen to these so-called experts and, you know, politicians and throw your hands up and stick your head in the sand, or you can work with great realtors like yourselves, professionals like me and great mortgage brokers, and, you know, start a savings program. And yeah, you might only have like 10 grand in the account a year from now, but you're still $10,000 ahead of where you were today. Right. So, you know, it just, it's like running a marathon. You'd never think of the 42.2 kilometers. Believe me, that 0.2 kilometers is a bit, is a pain. The last 200 meters, especially Vancouver, it's uphill. But the, but you don't look at the 42.2 kilometer run. You look at dividing it. You break it up into chunks. And every step you make and, you know, towards that goal gets you one step closer to getting to your goal, whether it's buying a house or paying for your kids' education or helping them out or saving for retirement. You know, it's all just taking, it's all baby steps. Tom Brady, you know, great analogy. Tom Brady, he keeps talking about making those infinitesimal marginal improvements on being a great quarterback. You know, it's not, you're not going to be like go from zero to number 10 all in, you know, on a weekend, being a weekend warrior. It's those little slivers of, you know, of progress that actually help compound things over time. So that's basically it. That's my soapbox. Sorry.
Sound advice. I was just reading about a Tom Brady baseball card that somebody had signed that said along the lines of
baseball.
Baseball, yeah. I said something along the lines of, if baseball doesn't work out, there's always football, because I think he was a baseball player before he played football. So, Adam, we have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions to end the show with. Can you stick around for that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no problem at all.
This podcast is sponsored by Jethro Condos in downtown Langley. Over 100 homes under $425,000 with one-bedroom suites starting at $399,900.
Here's what's incredible, Adam. These condos actually cash flow. When's the last time we could say that about new construction in the Lower Mainland? With these entry-level prices, the numbers actually work for investors.
And you're in the heart of downtown Langley, surrounded by trendy cafes, artisan bakeries, and parks. The area is experiencing incredible growth and new development.
Yeah, the location is absolutely key. Jethro is steps from the future Langley SkyTrain station. Get in before that transit connection transforms the area. Because once that SkyTrain arrives, you're looking at direct connections across the Lower Mainland.
Jethro is a Whitetail Homes project. Whitetail Homes has over 25 years of experience with quality construction and finishes that exceed expectations. We're talking vibrant interiors, expansive windows, and thoughtful design.
For realtors listening, they are offering amazing cooperative incentives. This is a rare opportunity where the fundamentals make sense. Affordable entry, cash flow potential, and positioned for major transit infrastructure, an all-around win.
Register at jethrocondos.ca. That's J-E-T-H-R-O condos.ca.
Jethro Condos, distinctly Langley, uniquely yours.
Question number one, one book that you've read recently that you'd recommend?
Oh, that's without a doubt, The Psychology of Money. Sorry, it's another money book.
Perfect.
So yeah, I also read the biography of Captain James Cook as well. That was a long read. So you got to like biographies if you want to do that. So yeah, nice. I always like the underdogs, and Captain Cook was like a total underdog, and he became like the best navigator of probably in history, actually. So yeah, but anyway, so there you go.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Next question. In the last few years, Adam, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life or substantially improved your life?
Oh, I would say without a doubt, I picked up this book called The Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday. And it's this is probably like 3 or 4 years ago. And you just basically read a page a day by the date. And it's just it's mostly quoting Marcus Aurelius, who was a Stoic philosopher. The folks at marketing here at Raymond James, they said, you need a marketing team name. Like, you can't be just Adam Bowden Ball. So I was like, okay, just call it Seneca Wealth. Because Seneca was another Stoic philosopher. So I ripped off Seneca's name for this. I figure the copyright after 2,000 years has expired.
He's coming for you.
So yeah, so that was that. So yeah, that was it. So that's my habit. Every morning, I read a sentence from Ryan Holiday's book, and it's a Stoic quote. And then he has a little write-up paragraph kind of thing. So yeah, that's it.
Nice.
Well, that's great. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Question number three, what have you been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation?
I actually don't own a TV, so I binge read. So,
oh, wow. So,
yeah, but the last movie that I saw was Nuremberg. It was like we went out for kind of like a date night kind of thing, my wife and I. So, but we actually, it was really good. Russell Crowe did a really good job on it. So yeah, that was the last movie I saw. So yeah.
Nice.
Favorite band or music? Some you're listening to lately.
Oh, man. Well, my 15-year-old daughter has been playing Sabrina Carpenter nonstop. That's the only song that I can't get it out of my head. Man Child. But no, I like it all from AC/DC to Mozart. Like, I'm all over the map. Country. Yeah, you name it, jazz, the whole bit. The only thing that I don't like are musicals. I just never could wrap my head around musicals. Like, you're talking to a person and then you just break out into song.
Break into song.
It doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, it's nuts.
And last but not least, Adam, something that you've purchased for under $1,500 that's had a positive change in your life.
Oh, geez. Without a doubt, I would have to say my running shoes. I would say running, getting back into shape. I started running again when I was 27 or no, 37. Yeah, sorry, 37. And I just love it. I'm addicted to it. Although I've had to slow down because I wrecked my knee in the marathon, but one knee. So I'm still doing like 10K or whatever here and there. But yeah, I know it's just really good to to, you know, stay in shape. Yeah, no. Yeah. And then, yeah, that was it. So basically that's it.
Well, I got to say, that was, we say rapid fire. Those were, man, you didn't even have to think about those. That was quick. So I especially liked Sabrina Carpenter. Adam, how can people find out more about what you're up to and potentially get in touch?
Yeah, for sure. So my direct number is 604-465-41455. And then basically email is adam.bowden-ball. So BEAUDIN-ball at raymondjames.ca. Or if you just Google, you know, Raymond James, or just Google Adam Bowden Ball, I'm the first one. I'm the only person in the world for with that name.
Pretty good for Google.
Or something close to it. So yeah, but if you look up Raymond James, you'll be able to find me on the site as well. So yeah, no. So yeah, that's the one thing about unique names is once you know how to spell it, it's easy to find, but it's the spelling that's a pain in the butt.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time today. We really appreciate it.
No. It was a lot of fun, guys.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Adam Bowden Ball, Senior Financial Planner at Raymond James.
You know, it's always great having financial planners on this show who can put things into perspective. I loved, my favorite thing was the order of where, what to pay off. And, you know, you realize,
snowball.
Well, and the psychology behind it. I think it was a really smart point. Like that's something that, you know, somebody who's seasoned, who's been working with people over the years, he's realized there's a psychology to getting to the finish line, right? And I think that's, I think a lot of people in this market as well, like where it's not uncommon to have $1 million plus mortgage, it feels sometimes like, man, I'm never going to get, like it's not even worth, insurmountable, right? That's exactly it. So having somebody that's there that kind of guiding and coaching and psychology plays a big role, so.
The other thing about that is, you know, as he was saying that, it made so much sense. And I, you know, I think of myself, and I'm sure a lot of people do, is, oh, I'm very sophisticated. I'll be paying off my lowest interest rates first, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
It turns out not always the best way to proceed. And I think that's a really smart point. The other thing about psychology that I liked about this conversation, Adam, was cut out the noise. You know,
yeah.
Especially if you're, you know, you have goals. I feel like the media, especially, it's a tough city to achieve a lot of things in because of the cost of living. But wallowing online is definitely not the way to get any closer to that. And I think Adam made that pretty clear, which is a nice reminder for everyone. So great conversation, and yes, some the RESP. Hold on, like let's just Adam.
Well,
the RESP.
I know. I've got a few more as well.
The RESP to pay down your child's mortgage over 4 to 5 years when they're in school. Love that. Love that. And that doesn't have to be in Vancouver, but that's great. That's a great way to get a starter home if you can swing the down payment.
Yeah, Matt. And real estate is supposed to be boring, right? It's supposed to be something that you invest in and you're kind of thinking the long-term, long horizon outlook. And you'll do exceptionally well on your real estate. But this idea that, like, you know, you're going to buy whatever coin, meme coin, and be a multimillionaire overnight. Stick to the basics. Put a good plan together.
Fundamentals for the win, Adam. That's for sure. What else do we have before we cut for the day? VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, where all things real estate related live. But also, Adam, more importantly right now, you know, we have buyer's resources that people are taking advantage of every day. We have sellers' resources that people are taking advantage of every day, especially people that are getting ready for next year right now. I feel like a lot of people are reaching out, which is exciting. But if you find value in these conversations, and I feel like a lot of people will have found value in the conversation today, please share with a friend or a family member. Reviews are always nice, but we're just trying to, you know, keep growing and keep moving into 2026. So please... like, share, or review. Is that how they say it?
And that's how they say it.
We thank you for that. We thank you for that.
Excellent. Well, we are back next week with episode 497. Very exciting. We're almost at that, almost just in time for Christmas, almost at that 500th episode. So
that's right. Yeah. If you want to talk about that or anything else, give me a shout at 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, especially for this episode, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We'll have a great week, and we're back here next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.